Time, weather, and...
Welcome to the Jay and Pav Podcast Experience.
You're listening to The Chey and Pav Show, Teachers Talking Teaching.
Where two middle school teachers sharing our reflections, insights about the topics that matter the most in the classroom. So hey, Pav, join us in the hallway or even the parking lot, or better yet, how about the staff room?
Welcome to episode 133 of the Chey and Pav Show. Thank you for joining us as we sit around the table to talk teaching. In today's episode, we talk about how we've been running student council at school and leveraging the student leadership capabilities to create an environment filled with activity and excitement. The episode is going to have a lot of great chatter between myself and my co-host, so let's get right into it. My name is Pav, and I'm only part of this hosting team. My podcast partner sits to my right, and he's going to introduce himself.
And we're off to see the wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Oz. Ba-la-la-la-la. It's a twister, Dorothy. It's a twister.
That was far better than I thought it was going to be.
There's no place like home. There's no place like home. And you are... boom! Magically back in the Chey and Pav studio audience. And as I look over to the couch, it's empty.
Yeah, as
so
always.
three of you, you can come anytime to watch the show. And I am Chey the Hurricane.
The Twister.
Oh, the Twister Cheney. Twister, like twist a double play, turn a double play,
sure.
The twist it up.
If that's what you want.
And I, of course, sit beside Canada's very own educational podcast award winner for 2023 for best educational podcast series is The Pav Show.
Yes. The Pav Show, everybody. Thank you for joining me today.
And Pav.
Yeah.
I'm going to say something so performative. I'm excited to be here.
Is that really performative? Because you are excited to be here.
I am. I just hate saying it. Like in baseball?
Well, it's because it's cliche.
Yeah.
So we just have to find new things to say.
Because in baseball, everyone says, let's go!
Yeah, let's go.
I'm so tired of people saying, let's go! Find something else to draw from your vernacular.
Well, that's what my kids say, too, when they're excited about something.
Is let's go?
Let's go!
Let's go! Let's go! I actually started it with my students because I don't know if you follow me on Twitter. And if you don't, you should.
Are you talking to me?
Actually, I'm not sure if you do or not. I'll look into it. I had shared that my students just picked up on this thing that they were going to applaud me every time I walked out of the room. And you know, the three smart people, I said, why are we out of the room? Because you know.
Did anybody actually say that?
Oh, no, okay. No. But when I made the tweet, I said, someone's going to tell me, why am I not in the room? How come I'm walking into my classroom? And they've been applauding me. So I decided that I was going to gift it back. I had to find some way to acknowledge it other than a smile and a thank you. So when they started to applaud, I would start to applaud and I started to fist pump. And I went, let's go, let's go.
So you turn it around and then the students are probably super confused.
That's right.
Like, why is Mr. Janey clapping?
And then on Friday, I actually snuck into the class because I know I wasn't there. I was in a meeting.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had coverage. So when I went quietly back into class and I ran in, I started to applaud them.
And they were totally thrown off.
Yeah. And they immediately started to applaud. And then we were all screaming, let's go. Let's go. Yeah, let's go.
That's a great way to end the week.
It was. It's funny sometimes how the littlest things amuse a middle school student.
Yes. Oh, 100%. 100%. There are like tiny little things that will just get them super excited. Like I'll open a box of crackers that we had left over from snack program that day. That's like, hey guys.
That's dangerous.
No, but then I like equitably distribute the crackers. But and it's not like let them go at it.
Open a box of crackers in middle school class. You got trouble coming.
Got trouble coming.
Oh, Mr. Cheney.
All you see are like crumbs in the empty wrapper on the floor. Yeah. Yeah. Not going to let that happen. No, I control the snack at the end of the day. There's no way.
Now, completely off topic because we haven't even addressed the topic.
No, we haven't.
In middle school, they don't worry about box of crackers because they bring in a buffet, a fast food after lunch, like you wouldn't believe.
In grade eight, yes. Not in grade six. In grade six, they're still scared of leaving school property.
That's right. In grade eight, they're off everywhere. Yeah. But half my kids, they don't go off school property to get their fast food. They Uber eat it with a student. That's right.
Yeah, they're not smart. They're not dumb enough to pay actual Uber.
3 minutes after the bell, hey, Mr. Chink, I go downstairs, my Uber Eats is here. I'm like, okay. And they come back in with this huge, you know, with the label all over the big, huge McDonald's bag. And like, one, it's annoying, but two, it's pretty resourceful on one level.
It is. You know, one of these days we're going to have a conversation about how do we balance giving students the choice to eat whenever they need to eat in class and then just shutting down the restaurant for an hour so we can get something done. Like, sometimes I feel like, okay, if you need to eat something, go and eat something. But then it's the whole day is just eating.
It is ballooned out. Because I remember when this was my teaching philosophy, like almost 15 years ago. And like, it was like unheard of. Teachers couldn't believe I let kids eat whenever.
Right. But there's still a lot of people who wouldn't who would be like, wow, I can't believe you do that.
About my teaching pedagogy in general.
In general, yeah.
But fast food was never an issue. Only for me, since COVID, has this been an issue where I didn't anticipate. Like, the ability to let kids eat when they want, and you realize, but kids are now just grabbing their phone, ordering food, have brought fast food, are going to go off and go get fast food, and you've got mountains and piles of food everywhere. And I'm like, I want to honor the idea of being able to eat whenever, but now it's all the Knights of the Round Table. We're going to feast till dawn-ish.
I don't want this to become the episode because it quite possibly could be. But if you take a look at, there's an issue for me when it comes to me being a teacher because I, like you, I want to honor it and I want you to, as a student, know when you feel like you really need to just take a break to have a snack, right? And we adults have this ability when we go to workshops and presentations or we're sitting at a staff meeting, just quietly go up and grab something to eat and have a seat and just continue being a part of the class. There's a disconnect, though, with what students are able to do with that choice. And so I tell my students, like, you know, very in a friendly way, in a classroom culture, community built sort of way, you guys don't know how to do two things at once. So I either have to let you eat for a few minutes and then we get to work, or we work and then we save the eating for later, because there's no way you know how to do both at the same time. So we've kind of established our own balance, but it's taken months to get there.
There's a lot of coaching on how to bring food in the classroom in order to have food when you need it.
But then be productive at the same time, which I feel like that productivity is really lacking with the choice.
I find that's what I probably notice the most, is that food now means we're not doing anything other than just engaging in the act of eating food.
Right.
With no desire to speed up eating of food. No. I can eat food for an hour, Mr.
That's
Chain.
Right. We can just keep going with this. And I understand that there's an energy lull in the afternoon. It's the same for adults as well. But then how do we navigate that? And how do we set aside a specific amount of time so that we can have the snack that we need to have a little break? Does that mean we have more breaks in the afternoon? Does that mean we take, like, maybe after 30 minutes we take a break rather than every hour and 20 minutes or whatever the case may be? I don't know. Because workspaces, many current workspaces in this, you know, the Google culture have become very free and open with the way that you use your workspace. So it's not the traditional desk. You're sitting in comfy chairs, you're sitting with side tables instead of desks, and you've got this buffet of food that's always available to you. That would not be the optimal learning. Well, I don't know. I as an adult, I know how to navigate that space. Right. But as a child, you give them that opportunity and they're just spending the time playing. So as a grown up, as a teacher, as an adult, how do I help them figure out how to do that? And I feel like at a younger and younger age, because this wasn't an issue until high school a few years ago. And now I feel like this is grade six. They just want to eat all the time.
If some kid includes a large coffee on their Uber Eats and I get it,
then I don't mind what you do. Just
no, I'm sure gone. There's some I'm gone. For me. I'm walking out of the classroom to enjoy my coffee and not paying attention. And when I come back, I expect to be applauded.
Yes.
But so tune into episode 135 when we talk about snacks.
Ooh, what's 134?
And if you're in academia, guess what? As much as you're shaking your head saying, what are we talking about? This is what classroom teachers know as issues. So when the next time you thrust upon me your magic formula that engages all learners at all times for the longest duration ever humanly known, notice this is going to be a factor that derails your magic formula that you're going to assert to me works on every student in every particular moment, because this is a real issue. I'm keeping a straight face, but I have to keep it straight because it is. You can derail a class with a Big Mac combo.
Yes.
Let's get into some banter. Oh, we just did banter.
I think that was the banter.
Let's get into some things we've been up to. And we've been up to nothing.
It's been a long few months of just sleeping.
just teaching. Back to classroom. I forgot how tired teacher tired really is. You know, we still can present for all our district leads that are listening, that are not, they're just teachers. You can still hire us. We can still do this work for you. I miss presenting. We haven't had a chance to really present since ETT.
That was this early December?
Yeah. Like Pav still has skills. I know I'm too old. There's no value bringing me into your building, but hey, as I say in tongue in cheek, but you know where we have been? We were to Matthew Morris's book release.
Book launch. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a really fun night at Lula Lounge in Toronto. We got to be a part of the release of his book. And so that was a really cool experience for us and to meet Matthew in real life.
Yeah. One of those internet connections, social media connections, where you start to realize now that sort of, I believe during COVID, there was this like false sense that we were going to meet everyone as soon as the COVID sort of evaporated and people could move around. Then you realize, actually, I'm never going to meet these people. And even on the Twitter space, you know, there's lots of people that are Toronto, but I'm like, we're actually never going to connect.
There was that desire during COVID. Oh, I really wish I could meet you.
Oh.
And then when COVID kind of let up, it was like, well, there's a lot of people in my actual circle that I probably should see because it's been a few years. And then it's just sort of it's not that the desire went away. It just became a little bit lower in the list of priorities, I suppose. Which is unfortunate. But Matthew Morris's new book is called Black Boys Like Me, and it's published by Penguin Books, and it's a phenomenal read. We were able to pick up a copy at the launch, but that can be found wherever books are sold. And so please check that out. And actually, you should go get it from Another Story.
Yes.
Bookshop. Another Story was part of the book launch, and it was a fantastic independent bookstore in Toronto. So if you are in Toronto area, please head over to Another Story Bookshop and go grab that. It's in the Roncesvalles area.
Perfect. Now, you can catch me interviewing Matthew for our ETT podcast.
That's
project,
right, Teacher Talk.
But you know we're going to invite him on our podcast here where conversation will be a little more lit because I'm nowhere near... Sorry, did I sound young? Did I sound like I was 35 rather than 50?
Okay, sure.
Either way, it'll be a little bit more off the cuff because I'm on my best performance with the ETT podcast. But on the Che and Pav show, I'm just Che. The Hurricane, Cheney. Let's talk about the Canadian Podcast Awards, Pav, because we have not recorded a podcast since we won that award for Best Educational Series for 2023. And it was really, really humbling, really, really exciting because, you know, we have been doing this a long time, like many other podcasts, a long time, a lot of independent podcasters. There's not six people that come in and edit and create social media for us and do all this work. This is our passion project. And for the Canadian Podcast Awards to sort of honor our work is really validating, really humbling. And beyond us winning, it's also a great space. The Canadian Podcast Awards put on a really great show. They really honored a lot of diverse types of podcasts. So even in the educational space, it's not just teacher talk. There's all kinds of things to learn. And so one, check out their space. Look them up on web, Canadian Podcast Awards. You'll find them. You'll find them in iTunes on a category or maybe still. I don't know, Pav. Now I don't know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. It was on iTunes podcast, the Canadian Podcast Awards. Maybe it's still not live.
Oh, I don't know.
They have to check that. But they put on a great show. They got their podcast coming up. They've got a real great network honoring Canadian podcasts. Dive into that space, not solely because we won, because there's so much great content there. And we were really excited to win that because we've been doing this a long time. And it's not necessary to say we're the best. There's lots of great Canadian educational content in the teacher space. And we know they're doing great work. And this award doesn't necessarily mean we're doing better work. But for us, it was really nice to get that award because, yes, you can record a podcast in your kitchen with an empty sofa waiting for guests to come and still win some recognition.
Yeah, and that's what it's about. It's the recognition. We do feel like, you know, we've done this a while, so it's nice to get like that little, you know, applause, that little nod that we're doing something right, and that recognition has really meant a lot to us. So that was a fantastic experience for us.
And maybe one more. We have our own book coming out very soon, Amplifying Our Practice.
Yeah.
A series of chapters of interviews and our sort of anecdotes. I guess it's a fusion of a interview episode with one of our non-interview episodes where we just sort of tell our anecdotes.
Yeah.
And we're looking forward because this project's been in the works for a long, long time. Lots of great, predominantly Ontario teachers, but a few teachers and a few people we've known outside of the Ontario space through
internationally
our
that
have contributed to the book in realms of anti-racism, reading, library spaces, curating books, read aloud, some of the things, some assessment pieces, some of the things that we found foundational to our teaching. We just wanted to curate this content and we're excited. And forward written by Debbie Donsky. And maybe later we'll share some of the other contributors, but we won't go into that list now.
You know, but what? Very soon, which is really exciting.
I had marked here in my banter section. I was just going to go off on all the tweets I couldn't stand this week, but we've been.
Okay. Maybe we'll save that for after the show.
I'm not sure why we're laughing, but that's fine. I had this on banter that if anything's got slow, I got a whole category here of tweets I need to take care of. Come on back and listen to the Chain Path shows. We talk about student council on episode
133.
And you're listening to Chain Path Show. If he only had a brain.
How old were you when you first watched The Wizard of Oz?
No idea, but I know my grandfather had it on VHS.
Yes, and you watched it often?
Often, not as much as Back to the Future.
Right. That was like every single
time. Staple, but it was there.
It was there. Yeah. I think Wizard of Oz was on TV a lot when we were young. So if it was on TV, it was on.
And I bought my mother the soundtrack on CD.
Aww.
When I was just a young little boy.
Oh, that's really sweet. So I'm sure she's.
That's why it's ingrained here. She better appreciate it because she listens to the episode 16 times.
She's one of our greatest listeners. Absolutely.
100%. No, and greatest critics. So for all you
people, she criticizes you. Yeah. I don't hear about the criticism that she gives me.
It usually starts with "If you only had a brain." Da, 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 da.
That's how our conversation.
So for all those people on Twitter that want to troll me, you got nothing on my mother. You got nothing on what my mother delivers every time I deliver an episode. Because when the phone rings, I'm like, "Oh my gosh, I know what's coming." But let's talk about the content
Student
of
Council.
This episode.
Yeah, that's right. We're talking about student council. So Che and I have taken on the student council at school. I'm a grade 6 teacher. Che is a grade 8 teacher.
And Pat, you know, when we came, because, you know, if you listen to, you sort of know, we taught together.
Yeah.
Then we didn't teach together. Then we both became middle year success counselors. And now we're back at Beaumont, almost full circle. But that implies that the end is coming and we will repeat. But that is not true. But now that we're here, when we came back, we had some goals as a team.
Yeah.
Despite not necessarily being on the same grade teams, we were divisional teams. We said, what can we do that's different? How can we take all the skills we've sort of learned and grown? Because we've talked about how our growth has been exponential as teachers the last 3 years. So how does this manifest when you go back to your school to do things that are new and different? And I know I told you that I needed to get out, not because I had to get out. I wanted to get out of the physical education space in regards to, I didn't want to dedicate all my extracurricular time to sports. I have done it for like 18 years. I wanted to do something new. I had visions. I'd always been a part of student council, but I told you, I've never run it. I'd love to run it. And so you and I sort of chit-chatted and said, let's do this.
Let's do it. Yeah, let's run student council together. So
the conversation went a little bit like, let's go!
Let's go. Yeah, there was a lot of applause. It was great.
And we decided, and Pat, you cut me off whenever you want, that we wanted to do, we had great role models ahead of us, and we'd worked with great people, and we had a great infrastructure of what we know we wanted to mimic, thinking classroom vernacular. But also, we had our goals and our own expertise. How can we make this more? How can we expand? How can we extend? With all the vast experiences we have, how can we take something that's already great and make it great and? And that was sort of like, what was our fire? We wanted to do something with student council that hadn't been done before in our school. And so we've made it our, not, well, top priority. Not that we only have one top priority, but it's something of real importance to us, was to really bring student council to be the forefront of our school infrastructure. Not a secondary thought, not just repeating what had been done in the past, but to make it its own new live entity. As students had said, Mr. Cheney, we're the OG, right? And I said, you are the OG student council.
And the OG, like, do something different. We wanted to give them an opportunity to be a fabric of the leadership in the school. Like, almost like one of, like, a group of students that had the same responsibilities as many of the faculty members, just as the staff. Like, having those abilities to run things in the school, to establish who they are as students, and to make change in the school that is positive and create culture, and to emphasize the importance of that culture in everything that they did. So that became the mission of the student council, is building that community within the school setting, and really being foundational in establishing that culture in the space.
Pav, adding that, when we talked about school culture, we wanted our student council to be one. We didn't want to run elections. And I know a lot of student councils in the years past always run elections. Get a prime minister. And I know you can make curricular connections, but we wanted it to actually to sort of break down that hierarchy. And when we talk about a lot of our anti-racist work and our disruption of education, we often talk about the hierarchy and then immediately create our own hierarchies to do it.
Yeah.
And we thought this was important, to create a student council that was sort of rooted in some of the disruption we wanted to see in education, in the sense that our student council wasn't going to be a traditional, let's vote. Actually, let's create a space where we include as many people as we possibly can and not designate any two or three people as the leader, but rather let's see what's going to happen organically. And we know that's messy and it takes a little bit of time. And what ended up happening for us, Pav, on that foundation is that the students picked their own leaders. Now they picked their own hierarchy, but it was different in the sense that once we collected our students and they all wrote their little resumes and they all came on and we made a robust, we've told everyone we're only taking 20. I think our student council is about 65 kids in a middle school that probably has 73 kids. Like, there's almost everyone that is in.
And people keep joining. The thing that they have to ensure that they do is show up to every meeting, because every meeting is very, very, very important. And that's really the only, like, I've let like at least 3 kids join since.
Fair. Because we're doing great things, and you could talk about what's being seen as students that didn't necessarily think to apply are starting to see the value of what they're doing. They want to be a part of it. And what's naturally happened is they sort of designated who was going to be in charge.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say that this is like an in charge in the sense that this is our leader. It's more like this is the person, because they've discovered that without someone that's kind of keeping everything organized, it becomes very difficult to know what's going on. So they've established one very capable person that they know is capable, we know is capable, but it was entirely their decision that we see what this person is doing and we see what this person is capable of, and we would like this person to help keep us as organized as possible.
Organize the chains of communication. Because one thing we said is that we have more than multiple, so many teams doing so many different things, yeah. I have to be able to talk to one person and know that information is getting to all nine members.
That's right.
And that sort of part that I want to talk about, that component of it. But when we built it, we said we wanted to build culture, but we wanted to have cultural events, like to build the school culture in regards to pumping everyone up and sort of theme days and spirit. But we also wanted to create a lot of learning, which I know is also part of the culture. And I know for you and I, we wanted our student council to take an active role in our school fabric, providing learning opportunities, engagement opportunities for students, so that it wasn't just, our student council wasn't just running dances, running our canned food drive, running theme weeks, running spirit events, trying to raise money for things, but rather trying to creating spaces all the time for students to learn and lead activities that would create learning opportunities. And some of them, we've been running a Reading Buddies program, mm-hmm. for grade twos and threes.
Yep.
Our student council, and one also to say, this wasn't our direction. We gave the idea that we wanted to create learning opportunities, and then they
created all of these. Yeah, it was actually a really great meeting that we had. We had a lot of space, chart paper kind of in a bunch of different places in the room, and students literally just went around creating the ideas, like the giving the chart papers names for things that they wanted to see happen in the school. So they wrote down all kinds of things. They had the Reading Buddies, they had the food drive, they had fundraising, they had school dances, they had school spirit weeks or school theme weeks.
They had the candy gram sales.
They had candy grams. Then they had the two clubs that, the two camps, I should say, that have been established in the school and have become just the most sought after clubs, that every day I get kids coming to my room asking, is today this day? Is today this day? Is today this day? And I was like, no, it's Wednesday. No, it's Tuesday. But yeah, so they've established all of these different events and activities on their own, and they put together their own committees. So they had students that came and signed up for each of the things, and they decided, okay, the team for food drive is going to have six people on it, and these are the six people that are in charge. And so they have their own meetings that talk about Reading Buddies, or they have their own meetings that talk about the podcast, the school podcast or food drive, and how are we going to make things work, and what are our timelines, and where's the information going, and all of that. So I don't know. Are you going to talk about the two clubs? I didn't want to give it away in case you wanted to talk about the camps.
It was part of our learning package, and the Reading Buddies one has been really phenomenal.
Yeah.
Sold out all the time. And when I talk about when they make a club, what we've done with our student council, like, how are you going to get the information out? How are you going to be clear? How is it going to be reproducible? How is it not going to be one-off silo
Which
events?
Which teacher is supervising
yes.
with you?
And so they've been really great. They've got flyers. Our school's really messy. Because there's flyers all over the place.
Yes.
And they've been making announcements. And then they've had slide deck to slide the teachers. And any content they've been teaching, they've put it on a slide deck. So I said, say if player A is not here, who can just walk in and use the slide deck and deliver the content?
Yeah.
And I think that was some good learning for them.
Yeah.
But it's made the student council events really foundational. It's not just, oh, if this kid's here, they're going to run this. It's not the kid running it.
No.
The kid. They have really put the infrastructure into their program. So they have an entire slide deck that they put up on the screen, and they walk into their classroom.
Like a lesson plan.
That's right. They have someone working the computer. They have someone speaking on the slide deck. And on that, on regards to team, we've had our microbit team that has a fully
robotics,
complete...
Robotics and programming camp. Yeah.
Robotics and programming camp. And they have a full slide deck, and they use it every time. They have their team that comes in, who's working the projector, who's doing the demo, who's talking through the slide deck.
Yeah.
They have their flyers, they have their announcements, and they've created little mini presentations to go and visit all the classrooms. So I said, students, when they hear the announcement, you get 3% of them. Sorry, that's 3% too high. The flyers, 5% of people see the flyers. You walk in the room, you hit another 10%. They have really worked to make sure it's not about just having an idea. How are you going to market your idea? And they've been so good at that. And we've also have our Minecraft camp, which I think I don't want to say it's been the hot seller. I guess it's the loudest. The Minecraft crew is very loud. Not necessarily the hot seller, but if you're into Minecraft, you are every day screaming about, where's Minecraft Club?
I got to say that robotics has become very popular as well. Like, kids are very excited about both. I mean, they love the coding and learning how to code. Teachers are very grateful for students to have that opportunity to learn how to code and program at a lunchtime camp, because that is, you know, kind of taking the pressure off of teachers who may not be as comfortable as the students are, which I include myself in that group. So that has really, really taken off. And it's very busy all the time. Like this week we did grade fours for coding, and it was packed. It was packed. There's only two grade four classes, one full class and one is a split class. So it's not even the entire class of grade fours. I had so many kids in the room that I didn't have enough seats for them all or desk for them to sit at. So we had to bring in more chairs. There weren't enough micro bits, so they were paired off, and they were just so into it. The excitement was just through the roof. And I know that Minecraft has been the same way as well. Like, they are definitely loud to the point where we had to actually limit the number of students that were coming in because the bandwidth couldn't handle all of them being on Minecraft at the same time.
This is part of that learning curve. It seems like we want to do 4 to 8. And I'm like, are you sure you want to go grade four to eight? Because it's going to be busy in here. It's going to be hopping on. And then I said, why don't we do grade five? I said, no, Mr. Chain, let's do 4 to 8. And so I bowed down to student voice. I said, okay, we're going to do 40. The room was packed. And since then, we've done
just
grade
one
four,
grade.
Grade five. And Pat, when you think about how you're setting up your student council, how do you run these events? Yes, we run these events once a week. So the Microbit, the Minecraft, the Reading Buddies, on top of their meeting, on top of their executive meeting, their podcast. So they're almost something every day. So you do need teacher involvement. I know you and I are stretched to the max, and certainly like through, especially when we were building up to say the December dance and our December theme week, we were probably going lunch after school every day for maybe 6 weeks building up that. It is exhausting. So when you're thinking about how do you build your student council, even if you know, you feel that you and one other teacher can do it, you probably need four or five teachers. And at our school, a bunch of other teachers have seen what we've been doing and they've jumped on board and they've supported because we've hit our capacity. What's limiting students to be able to do more
is because we can't duplicate ourselves and clone ourselves, and we can only be in one space at one time.
And so say for the Microbit Club, the Microbit's doing Tuesday grade four, then it's grade five, then it's grade six, then it's grade seven. And we've also tried to, Azealia, who's one of our Twitter followers, we've watched her set up this girls' esports team, and we're not as ready to dive right in, not because we don't want to. We have to build our own capacity.
Yeah, that's right.
And so we were trying to honor that girls, that female space, girl space. We've been running Girl Minecraft Camp, very small at the moment, but we wanted to create a space where they feel that they can come in, because at the moment the Minecraft is dominated by very loud, excited boys. Nothing wrong with being loud and excited,
right?
But who's excluded through that intimidation? Because it's intimidating to see people that are really competent, really confident in a space. And so part of our growth.
And it also limits those beginner students who actually don't know how to play Minecraft. And there's like surprisingly, not surprisingly, expectedly, there are a number of them that have really never played Minecraft and are a little too scared to come into a Minecraft club because they just assume that everybody is already going to be very proficient. Mm-hmm. And I think when it comes to the girls that want to come to Minecraft, they also feel that sort of intimidation, as you said, as well. So that's something I think that we've already started to do, where we have just the girls coming in to play Minecraft. And that way, if they feel a little bit of that intimidation, that can be addressed during the camp that day. But just having more beginner classes, and that's just something that you learn through the experience. Like, this is what we have seen. This is what we are, you know, it is, yes, it's February and we are just kind of learning some of these things. So by the end of the year, we'll have everything figured out and then it'll be summer. And then in September, we'll have another place to start from.
Yeah.
With some of these kinks worked out.
I think for us, for sure, learning how to go as much as for students, I think of this learning component. They're not really pillars. They do end up working together. But I just know student councils that I have participated have been predominantly about culture and theme events and making money. And one thing we talked about, a theme of our student council is a service to community. Mm-hmm. How can we serve the community rather than trying to fundraise money? So I know often it's about fundraising for trips or fundraising for hoodies, for grads. We actually spoke to our student council. It's not really a space to facilitate just resources for grade eight. Mm-hmm. I said, I'm excited to do this because I want to do, and we talked about this, Pav, service to community. Everything we're doing is to serve the Beaumont or community more than anything. And we talked about that learning. All of a sudden, these learning experiences, they've become the culture now.
Yeah.
Because at lunch, you go into the lunchroom and everyone wants to figure, what's going on today? Yeah. Where are we running today?
Where's the club?
And so as much as you're maybe selling your candy canes for your candy cane gram to raise a little bit of revenue so that we can buy food and snacks so that when we're doing our dances, and we are running dances, totally student-led dances.
Yeah, totally student-led. Like everything. They're playing the music. They're doing the DJing. They're running the activities.
When I wasn't running student council, we always hired a DJ.
Yeah.
And then this year, I don't know. I think we were running a quick October. It was a dance-a-thon for the entire school, so students started to do it. And then all of a sudden, like, the crew came together and they were brainstorming. So they put a projector and they projected like a glowy wall, glowy something or other wall.
Yeah, like neon lights.
That's
like
right.
On the
and
walls,
said,
like lasers.
This looks really cool. And so when we decided to plan our dance, we're not going to hire a DJ. Let's figure out what we can do with students. And how they set up the gym, even when you think about how can I do this without a DJ, they brought down three computers, three projectors, and put three different light scenarios all over. And the gym had the right glow. And it was booming and it was great. They made their own playlist. They were sitting on stage. And then they put the Dance You Know It videos on and they were dancing. And, you know, teachers...
The Just Dance videos,
that's right,
yeah.
Just Dance. We had teachers at our school had been there for 18 years that they'd never seen a middle school dance like this. Everyone was dancing. And I'll give you one anecdote. Because every school has students that are maybe new to the school, don't connect well at the school. They cause tensions and we can go into greater details why. But we've had a few students that have, you know, causing some of those rifts and we're trying to work it out. And I told the student council, you and I told the student council, said, you provided a space for that student to actually feel included in the school. And what had happened is you remember with DJs before, you couldn't come on the stage, the DJ's there, leave him alone, blah, blah. And so we ran, we had our four students running their DJ, running their videos, and we had a bunch of other students on stage just dancing, just creating energy. We had to sign, say, get on the mic, help encourage the kids. And then when the Just Dance video started to go on, we had six or seven kids dancing. And then kids were all wanting to come up with the stage to dance, along with the entire gym dancing, like grade six, seven, eight. Everyone
Everybody
danced.
Was dancing. I've never seen that before.
And we had
no wallflowers.
We had a couple of those troublesome, just not because they're troublesome. We can go into those cold, hard truths later. Just he came on the stage and he was dancing. And he was dancing with his buddies. And all of a sudden he was making new friends. And I said, you know, teachers say, how can I help the student? Help us? Just said, student council, you helped that student.
You did.
You brought him into the school. You validated his work. And all
you helped him felt like he belonged
yes.
there. Yeah. And that's like no better way to welcome a student and to get them to feel like they belong than if the students do that themselves.
And I think I've given that kid a fist pump through the hallway every day since.
Yeah.
Not a lot of interactions, not in my hallway per se, but he just feels connected. I said, this is what happens when student council builds culture. And when it's student driven, there's these opportunities that I said, this never would have happened. Not that a DJ wouldn't have done a great job, but there's a slight disconnect when it's not that student voice, that connection to student.
Yeah.
And we talk about student council. That's sort of one of the things is running those school dances, running them themselves. And you know what? Every once in a while, there is a 15-second silence in between songs. It happens.
It happens. We're not perfect, but nobody really cares.
No, because when someone jumps on the mic and says a few things and it's you and it's your, we didn't have one hiss, one boo. And I said,
no.
Back 3 years ago, I would have worried about this. Like you can't.
If the DJ had like a little gap between the music, everybody went crazy.
That's right. Not now.
No.
It's fantastic.
It's great. It's been great. And then they also decide on what food they want to sell for the dance and they're able to sell everything themselves. Like, you know, one teacher is always kind of in the food area supervising rather than every food station handling money and glow stick station, because you can't have a dance without glow sticks. They're the number one hot seller, not the bags of chips or the juice or anything like that.
Glow sticks and grade sixes for the first 5 minutes wanting to play tag.
Oh, yeah. Yes. They're in the gym. What else would they do in the gym? They play tag.
Honestly, the grade eights like, Mr. Cheney, are you going to stop those grade sixes playing tag the first 5 minutes? Yeah. Like, yes, I am. Like, good. We're going to watch.
Yeah. The lights go on.
Do you know what? Can I tell a story unrelated? This is how the whole applaud thing started.
Yeah.
Up in the middle school hallway, there was a little bit of a commotion. And I walked out of my room to stop the commotion. And it stopped quickly. And I went silent. And I went back in my room and the grade eights just applauded me. Mr. Cheney, you're an alpha.
Oh.
Yeah, I knew you wouldn't like this story.
No, I don't like I don't like that terminology. I don't like that term. It's toxic terminology. Oh. I don't like kids call, like, I don't like when kids identify other males as alphas, because that is toxic.
Oh.
Because then they grow up thinking that that's what they need to be.
Be.
Mm. Yeah. And there's a lot of conversation. It's not just at the school that we are at, like in the middle years role. This is a conversation that I had with boys in every middle school class, you know, and we're not going to get into it because it gets like, it's not what the conversation needs to be right now, but I shut that down every single time. Likes. I'm like, no, we don't need to talk. We know Mr. Cheney shut down something that was disrupting the class. There's nothing alpha about that. I know you love it, but it's not my favorite thing.
I don't love it. I love it that I don't know if love it is the right. It's entertaining that that's what certain students fixate on.
But it's toxic.
Silence. This is an episode. Yeah. I never thought of it as toxic until you just brought it up.
Yeah, because it's not a trait. As a female, watching males call each other alphas is not desirable.
Mm.
It's not. Why do you need to be an alpha? What do you mean by alpha?
I didn't go in the hallway to be an alpha. I went in the hallway to stop the
commotion. No, I know. But the kids are definitely interpreting your ability to stop something from happening in the hallway as a male trait.
Oh, because only a male could be alpha.
Well, I've never heard of an alpha female. That's not a thing. It's alpha male.
Oh, I actually didn't know that. I thought alpha was okay. Please go. We have to dive into this.
Well, we can another time, but this
episode
is
episode 136.
Sure, 136. But yeah, this is a male trait. This is, they're assuming that only a man could close off whatever was happening in the hallway, that no woman, female teacher would be able to do that. That's why you've been given that applause.
Oh, I didn't interpret it that way.
Well, I mean, they're excited that you did it, but then when they add the alpha piece on top, that's where it becomes, well, you know,
you think
it's because
only
he's an in-charge man.
Oh.
Yeah,
oh.
And he's been able to do, like, turn that off because he's an in-charge man. He's the top of the male hierarchy.
Interesting.
Yeah, because no other man, no other woman in the school was able to get them to stop, but Mr. Cheney got them to stop, so he must be the alpha.
I would have thought just because I ran student council.
Yeah, I don't. We stop and we have a talk about what they think that means when they start using that terminology.
So on episode 136, we can talk about alpha and stoicism.
I don't know. Yeah, stoicism is another thing. Stoicism is another thing that gets misinterpreted because I've been doing my own learning myself. Stoicism is not equivalent to alpha, but it becomes...
No.
It becomes known as that because qualities that of stoicism become synonymous with what it means to be an alpha male.
I was described as stoic very early on in my career. I didn't take it as alpha.
No, but I think it becomes mixed together. I'm doing my own learning. I think that it just becomes stereotypical of many alpha male traits, or what get described as alpha male traits.
We veered off on a real
total tangent,
but it's like a good one.
I don't know. There's fun stuff for us to talk about here. I think we could talk about
fun all the time. This is good. Like I never.
Yeah. I'm not prepared for this conversation, so I'd like to prepare a little bit more. Like I feel like I'm not articulating my thoughts, and I'm getting emotional about it because I do get like very angry, I guess. Like, yeah, let's use that word. I do get angry when kids talk about Andrew Tate being like a very admirable character.
You
in
told
their lives.
Me about this conversation once in class about the Andrew Tate.
It was many, many classrooms where I had this, not just one. And so I kind of wanted to know what the, like, what is the intrigue? What is drawing boys to this, this ideal of the male character? And there's nothing, nothing as an adult woman that I find attractive about that in any part, any way whatsoever. And I just, I find it really dangerous.
How young men are gravitating to these voices.
Yes. And then that alpha male quality or that title gets attributed to men like him. And that's really, really dangerous, I think, for us as a society. But like I see it, and what really, really freaks me out is that I see it a lot. Like it wasn't just one school. It wasn't just one class in one school. It was several schools that I had the same conversation with boys, or I overheard the conversation between boys, and I kind of sat myself down and joined the conversation and see, like I'm not imposing any of my own views. I just want to hear what they have to say about it. And I found what I heard was disturbing.
And one could maybe even argue, this is why you do, I don't say impose, this is why you share your views. Tav, as you're talking, I'm thinking about this idea of student choice and student voice, and we often don't reel in student voice enough. I think there's a fear to do it because the simplistic pedagogy of student voice is really important, which it is. But if you study clinical psychology, of course, you know that the young adolescent mind is not fully developed. It's not totally cognitively aware of its surroundings. It needs to be nurtured. It needs to be given external information. It needs to be given that adult perspective. And when you're comparing, I assume, the Andrew Tate stuff becomes their consumer of low-resolution 3-second clips on TikTok, there needs to be that adult voice, that mature voice, not necessarily that you're adult and mature, I'm not necessarily making those connections, but data would suggest that most adults are slightly more in tune with the environment around them than, say, youth. This is our society already knows this. You and I have had this conversation. This is why kids can't go out and buy cigarettes, and they can't go out and buy alcohol, and there's certain regulations where they can go out and buy lottery tickets. Society is based, rules and regulations based on the notion that kids can't totally cognitively process the world around them, and this is why they're dependent on their parents, for legally dependent on their parents, because they need that sort of guidance. And so even when you say, I want to go in there and just listen, it's like, this is why the teachers, you do need to voice your opinions. You need to share your ideas, because in that particular space, when we talk about student voice, yes, student voice is important, but student voice can't mean that a teacher can't, I don't want to say trump their content, but be aware that I bring a wealth of experience and cognitive growth that you don't have, that maybe I can just start to take you away from, maybe you ponder why the words of Andrew Tate shouldn't hold as much value as you're giving them.
Well, yes, and I... In the situations where I have not built up any sort of relationship with the students, I'm in there maybe once every 2 weeks. I don't have those conversations. Admittedly, I might bring it up with the teacher, who is usually very aware that these are conversations that are happening. But with my own class, I do. It's a group of students that I have built that relationship with, and we do have open conversations about things, I do bring it up. And what it looks like is me asking further questions. It's not me saying, oh, you know, you really shouldn't do this, this, and this. It's me asking, and why do you think that his arguments for what a man should be are so popular? And why do you think that's the case? Why do you think that a man might feel threatened by, you know, any feminine energy that is around them? Why do you think, you know, and I just keep asking further and further questions, you know, why do you feel that way? Or tell me more about that. What do you think about that? And usually students run out of answers to give, because they don't actually know. And then when we get to that point, where they don't have an answer, then we have a real down-to-earth conversation about what it's actually like. And I impart whatever wisdom that I have for them about how to function as a man in society, and what that means and how to have relationships with women. But I find out as much as they know and where they're getting their information and how they're getting it and how that information is getting affirmed, because that's just as important. If they are surrounded by older male siblings or parents where this is the rhetoric that they're getting, then I have to tread very carefully with the way that I respond. But I have to make sure that I find out as much information as I can before I impose my views, which are informed by equity and social justice. And I think that that's very important.
It is. I'm thinking.
Yeah, I know. This totally went off on a tangent, but yeah, you're right. It is an important conversation. I'd like to be...
Even as you,
I'd like to dive into this a little bit more sometime.
As you tell its story, I start to think this is where, you know, I have to acknowledge, and I'm actually aware of this, my privilege as a male in regards to when I think about you having these conversations, you have to negotiate these conversations. But Mr. Cheney, in these conversations, not that I don't negotiate and don't worry about my words, but I don't worry about the pushback on my words, because I don't even know if I anticipate, and this like, underneath the surface, I know there won't be pushback because it's Mr. Cheney's words, or the messaging won't go home. The messaging won't be, what's the right word? I don't even know if I have the right vernacular for this. The messaging won't go home to weaponize the teacher, or even if it does go home, like you're talking about, you're worrying about sort of historical roots or generational interpretations of the male. It, because my voice is male voice, it's not going to go home to be weaponized.
Right.
So I get, and I've always known this, I get to speak cold, hard truths with much less fear.
Implication.
Now, that's right.
Yeah.
Now, I've done this, I want to hope that I've done this at school, not with students, but also the school wisely, knowing that my voice gets to be heard and doesn't get as challenged as often. I want to think I've acknowledged that and used that for good. Beyond just the scope of this narration.
Right. But I also want you to think about the things that your students are not telling you because of your position in the classroom and that sort of status that you hold.
I've always been really aware that students don't necessarily... Maybe it's a generality. I'll talk about my experience at my schools, that I've always known that despite what I've done or despite my popularity or whatever you want to call it, I've always felt pretty assured that I'm the least informed about what's going on in all their personal lives, because there's sort of a persona or a look that, yes, I can be really helpful in certain areas, but they don't gravitate to me in regards to those really intimate conversations. And this is also why I would argue it's really important when you're building sort of your middle school to have a real diverse group of teachers, and also making sure teachers don't think they have to be the star all the time. I've always been aware that my ability to teach the way I teach is also because of the teacher beside me, because of the teacher beside them, because of the teacher beside them. And so I could be that sort of brash voice because the teacher next door would be the one that would be the one that students would have those conversations.
Right.
I've never been blind to think that I get to act the way I do, not that I act out of control, but that I don't get to teach the way I teach despite the teacher beside me, but rather the opposite, because of the teacher beside me, because of all those diverse personalities, because of all those diverse dynamics, a student sort of, I think what you're getting to is, expects a certain level of brashness from me, a little bit of cold, hard truth from Mr. Cheney. But on the flip side of that coin is a little less...
openness.
Yes, with conversation. We're just here to consume. As much as I don't think I center myself, I'm also aware that people consume my words with very little pushback. Even if I ask them for pushback, I think what you're getting to is because this persona of alpha, even if not alpha, because of male.
Right. But, right. And it is also a result of there not being very many male teachers in the school that we teach at. You are one of three currently.
In a staff of like 60.
Yeah, about 40.
That's if what
we're
I said.
Realistic.
That's what I said.
But yes, you're one of very few. And so if you're looking at male, what are traditionally thought of as male qualities, you would definitely be one of the teachers that have those characteristically male qualities or stereotypically characteristic of male qualities, right? Which is why I think there is this idea that students cannot come to you with those kinds of issues, right? There is probably this idea that if this is a man, then I can't talk to them about my girl problems, right? And so I would hope that the students are aware that they can go to any one of the female or women teachers that are on staff, or any other teacher on staff, doesn't have to be a woman teacher, to have those kinds of open conversations. And I think that students are, like, from what I have seen in my own experience, that they do that. They do that naturally. They gravitate to who they find to be their caring adult in the school. I just hope that every student feels like they have one. And that's tough to get to, because I also don't feel like I am always one of those teachers.
It's tough. It's tough for a teacher, a homeroom teacher, to be okay with the fact that the students in your homeroom may not gravitate to you.
Yeah. And I used to take offense to that before, in the beginning. But when you learn about who you are as an educator and what are your strengths, that emotional kind of that nurturance and that caregiving, that at that maternal level, that was never me as a teacher. So I always made sure that students knew that they had this teacher and this teacher and this teacher. Oh, this teacher shows, you know, is always very nurturing. You know, and they gravitate towards those teachers anyway, because it comes through in the way that they present themselves and lead, you know, themselves in the school setting. So I think that students, as long as students know that there is someone that they can to, and it's not to say that students don't come to me, of course they do. But, you know, I'm not turning students away because I don't know how to deal with their issues. But it's, you know, it's, I've never, like, when you take a look at the big picture, I have not usually been one of those. I just am very like structured. And I think that that rigidity in my structure kind of prevents me from being the one of the people that will stop everything to nurture something. I don't know. I'm not articulating myself. I'm not prepared for this. I was going to talk about student council.
That's what we're prepared for. But I want to say thank you for taking us in this tangent, because ultimately, as I'm thinking about this conversation, one, I'm thinking about the specifics of the conversation, but I'm also thinking of the theme of our show.
Yeah.
It's teachers talking teaching. It's hallway conversations recorded. And this is how learning happens. It's not always the 4 points we articulate that are going to come across. It was one word, one anecdote led to a story that lies us, puts us in a space to start thinking a little bit more intentionally about these interactions and these dynamics in our schools. And there's many themes you could draw upon or extract upon. Just the idea that when you're thinking of your middle school, your teachers are all working in harmony, and there's real value in those teachers all being very diverse in personalities, along with everything else that goes with that, because not all students are going to gravitate or connect with.
Right.
And it was good. Like, yeah. I always think I'm aware of my maleness. I'm aware of my whiteness in a completely racialized community. That doesn't mean I don't need a... It's not to say I've got it mastered. I like to think that I've got a pulse on it, but sometimes you lose that pulse in the energy of the conversation or the energy of the activity. And I didn't think of that sort of reinforcing the very low-resolution alpha traits of Andrew Tate when I come back from the hallway, when those students just show applause. I didn't make those connections. I just thought they were appreciative that I can go out and create stop hallway nonsense that's depriving them
of
their learning.
What I'd like you to do next time that happens is when, you know, there's a whole group of boys that are cheering, "That's so alpha," I'd like you to say, "No, that's so effective teacher," you know, "and that's so, you know, considerate adult," or, you know, I'm monitoring safety. I am, you know, whatever. Something, turn that back into why that was beneficial for you as students, not as this is what you should be aspiring to become as a male, someone who can shut down a fight or someone who can get a group of kids to go away with one look, right? Because that look wouldn't work for me. If I was to stand outside and just like stare down a kid, like that would just be like, I would get an FU and a finger thrown at me.
I thought you meant my look wouldn't work on you. And I was like, I know it doesn't.
No, your look does not work on me.
But Pav, away from the jokes, I want to thank you for taking us into this space, because good conversation.
Yeah, it has been great conversation. Yeah.
As we're thinking, I'm thinking this is so off topic. The content of the episode is not really, really deep, but this is a deep conversation. This is what I love about the show.
Yeah.
Like on an interpersonal level, what do I love about the show? These conversations.
Yes, absolutely. We have grown a lot, I think, as two teachers through those conversations. Should we take a break and then maybe come back and...
Commercial and wrap up this episode on Student Council. Hey, remember? Remember we're talking about Student Council? We have spent 4 minutes on this episode talking about Student Council. Exactly what you came for. And if you thought you were coming for a full hour of Student Council, you must be new to the show.
And you're listening to The Chay and Pav Show.
And this episode is brought to you by the app Full Prep. When you're having one of those days where you could just use the full duration of your prep, click this app and you will be assured your full 40 minutes. Because we all know that those 40 minutes usually end up being 3. Download your app of Full Prep on your favorite cell phone provider.
And you're listening to The Chay and Pav Show.
Are you kidding me? Is there an app that actually gives me my full prep?
I actually thought that was real. I was like, what is this app?
It's February. I haven't had one of those yet. If I knew I could just push a button and get my full prep, I'd pay an annual subscription of $100 a year if I get a full prep.
My prep usually is taken up by printing one document.
This is episode 136. How can we can send people to the moon, but you can't print a piece of paper in a school in under 15 minutes. It's not doable.
I have to say that I cried my way to getting a network printer in my room. And so now...
I was going to make a joke.
I'll be able to print 40 pages in my prep of 40 minutes.
I can't wait. What's your joke? No, I won't. I was going to say that's very alpha of you, but we don't want to dive back into that next 20 minutes. But I would love to dive back into that conversation, actually, Pat. But I am going to, you already got made sure that my laptop is now connected to your printer. So I'm looking forward to printing
Perfect.
In your room.
There you go. Yours before mine.
We've been talking about Student Council. That was probably about an hour and a half ago.
Yes.
And we were just talking about one, our own personal goals, Pav, to make Student Council really rich and vibrant. We wanted Student Council to be something that hadn't been before. Not that the Student Council had ever been limited or lacking. We just wanted a little bit more. We wanted to tap into some of our own growth through our own educational journey the last 5 years to bring these things in. So bringing a Student Council podcast, bringing Minecraft, bringing Microbits, bringing Reading Buddies, creating learning opportunities from our Student Council, having more student voice, not necessarily outsourcing. Sort of pushing away from making money for like a grad trip or a grad hoodie to start to lie into that theme of service to community. What can we do to build the community? And yes, we know we need to make some money to be able to facilitate some of our events, and we want to make some money, but we don't want to run our Student Council to save $100 on a grad trip mm-hmm. or save $30 on a hoodie. That's just that we just dropped that. And so when you're thinking about maybe you're getting involved in Student Council, it's almost like a swag bag. You have to have lots of teachers. It just can't be done by one or two people. So if your ego is you want to do it, you got to drop. You got to use your ego to say, I actually need 4 or 5 people to run the best possible program. Is it all intensive? It is. I have had years where I have coached every single sport. And that's intense, but it's not the same intensity of this mm-hmm. because there's so many different components, so many different personalities, so many great ideas. When you're coaching a team, like ultimately as a teacher, I'm still running the team. I'm still running the practice. I know where I want to go. But in that Student Council space, you have students coming up with ideas, getting inspired, incorporating all kinds of different skills, whether you're making announcements, making yeah. presentations, making slide decks, running events. I see you on the mic.
Yeah, I was going to say that this is something that we didn't talk about that I really wanted to talk about, that the students that are participating in these camps and events are not the only ones that are benefiting from all of the stuff that's happening in the school. The students that are actually part of Student Council and are running all of these events are learning how to do event planning. They're becoming proficient in Canva or Adobe Express with making flyers and advertisements that can be used as infographics throughout the school. They're creating slide decks that are very, very comprehensive and filled with lots of very valuable information that are not just great for students to jump in and teach the lesson, but are also great for teachers to use. They're learning how to create lesson plans. They're learning how to run a class. When I supervise robotics with the students, they're running the show. They're completely from start to finish. I rarely have to step in, but then at the end of the lesson, at the end of lunch, they come to me and say, wow, they really weren't listening. And I was like, now you know what that's like. So they're actually picking up a real wealth of skills by running all of these events and learning how to navigate when things don't quite go the way you expected them to go. And so that is, I think, such an invaluable learning experience for the students that are part of student council.
Those are crucial points. I don't know what else to add on that, Pav. You said it brilliantly. There's so much learning for everyone in this space. It's not just so the people you're providing to. It's these great learning opportunities for your grade 6 and your grade 7 and your grade 8 students that are building all these capacities, getting a real sense of building structure. And Pav, I would say this is also a byproduct of making sure you're making your student council accountable in the sense that you're not just running a Minecraft where you show up that day and say, let's do this. You have to create, you have to front load your planning. You have to make your flyers. You have to make your announcements. You have to make your go-to-classroom team to have a brief 3-minute presentation. You have to have a slide deck that people can dive into.
You have to think about what technology is going to be available, because grade 5 and up have one-to-one devices in TDSB, but grade 4 and below don't. So if you're going to have robotics and you need to have Chromebooks for everybody in the class, then you got to find those Chromebooks and make sure that everybody's got one that they can use.
I got to remind my class every day. Plug in those Chromebooks.
Plug in those Chromebooks.
Mr. Cheney, how come our Chromebooks have no power? I said, because I don't have a wand that I tap on them and they magically get 100%. You got to plug them in.
That's how they work.
Pav, I think it's time for a little swag bag.
Yes, we do have time for a swag bag.
This conversation has been fun. It's been all over the place. And if you're a teacher, you get it. If you're not a teacher, listen to our content. This is how teachers operate. This is a window into the teacher mindset, how quickly you can go off into new topics, new tangents. Today, we've been trying to tap into the idea of student council. One, if you've never been a part of one or if your school doesn't have an active one, we would suggest this is a real space, and Pav, you just articulated this, growth for everyone involved, teachers, leaders, and students. We talked about making a really valuable team. You need to have a lot of teachers involved. You can't do what you want to do with a student council with one or two teachers. Have a theme. And I've articulated, Pav, you've articulated, money wasn't the theme. It's not about raising money for a cause. Even if they're a great cause, start by the theme of service to community or a different theme. But I think I know in my experience that money has always been one of those, wondering how are we going to make money? Let's drop the make money right away. We can come to that later. Service to community, and then use it to build that rich culture, but not just necessarily through dances or theme weeks or crazy sock days or selling candy grams, but create those rich, vibrant learning opportunities. So you're creating your microbits or your robotics club. You have your Minecraft club. You have your reading buddies club. I know lots of classes run reading buddies. You turn it into a club through your student council. Don't think it won't sell out and be just robust with activity. There's all kinds of room. It becomes your vibrant school culture is when your student council is just running anything and everything. And Pav, you said this best. It's not just for the students you're serving. Everyone grows and benefits through a vibrant student council. You're giving those student leaders a real place to practice and see how their commitment to a task, their organization to a task, plays out in reality, so they can actually assess and build their student leadership by having a plan, seeing how it works, and seeing how students engage with it. And you've been listening to the Che and Pav Show, award-winning podcast for 2023.
20,023.
I got 20,023 winner. The Che and Pav Show.
It's been episode 133. Of the Che and Pav Show, and we've been talking about student council and our experience with that in our school. So thank you everybody for joining us. We hope to see you next time for episode 134. Coming soon, I hope, and not 2.5 months later.
Oh, 3 months isn't bad, APAP, because, you know, people keep coming back, and we love those people for when they come back.
Absolutely.
Well, it was only in the good old days that we used to do this once a week.
Yeah.
I'm getting old. I'm almost 50. You're supposed to say, no, you're not.
No, but you are.